You know our slogan around here is better practice, better life. But we're taking this belief to the next level. And we've recently announced the creation of a new association. It's called the Best Practices Association. Our association celebrates the mindset that is better practice, better life. This mindset celebrates time, healthy living, personal growth, clinical excellence, and impacting the lives of your patients and your team through intentional leadership. In fact, we are the work-life balance experts in dentistry. The BPA will coach independent dental practices like yours to thrive by sharing best practices and operational habits, behaviors, systems, tools, and insight that lead to profitability and sustained growth, and you can still have a life. So if you're a dentist that wants to surround yourself with great thinkers, let us help you create your own version of better practice, better life. Go to actdental.com/BPA or hit the link in the show notes.
Hey, this is Jim Otten. Good afternoon. You're watching the Best Practices Show. Hey guys, thanks for watching the Best Practices Show. We take a look at the best business practices from the best dental practices all over the world. And if you're looking at growing a fee-for-service practice and you're looking for an advantage, I've got a great treat for you with a great friend of mine, Dr. Jim Otten, who's a fabulous restorative dentist. And we're going to have another way to look at how you do that in fee-for-service dentistry. So you don't want to miss this. So do me a favor, grab a pen and hit the share button. You're going to love this. Now, a couple show notes. We are shooting this live at the beginning of 2019, like we always do. And so while we're on Facebook and producing the show and it's going out, if you have questions, continue to add them to the feed or add them to the feed. And I'll ask Dr. Otten directly while we have him on the show, because I want you guys to get the most out of this. Also, if you're watching these later on and you still have questions, continue to add them to the feed and you'll see Dr. Otten's really good at getting back to you and giving you a really thoughtful answer. Love all the suggestions, and we're stocking them up, trying to do our best to put all these shows together on some of the things that you want to see. So keep sending them to us. And I love the shares and all the great comments and feedback that we got all last year. Thank you guys so much. Over 39,000 followers on Facebook, and over almost 200,000 now of you have visited us on iTunes. And I don't even know how that works, but all I can say is thank you. So my guest today is a good friend of mine, Jim. I've known you for a long time. Actually, when I moved to Kansas City and we built our first office there, I was kind of searching around. I'd been to the Pankey Institute, other places, and people were like, oh, if you're in Kansas City, you got to go see Dr. Jim Otten. Now, I know who you are. Many people who watch our show have seen you. You are an instructor at, you've been at Pankey and now at Spear, and do a lot of great things. If somebody doesn't know who Dr. Jim Otten is, give us a little background.
Hey, you know, thanks, Kirk. I'm super stoked to be here. And am I the first person in 2019?
You are.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I'm really honored to be your first guest. So my background is this. You know, I've learned a lot over the past 35 years. Just kind of tripping over myself sometimes, and doing things a lot by intention as well. And I'm a restorative dentist. I've had a restorative practice almost my entire career. You know, when you come out of school, you think you know some stuff, and then you meet people like Pete Dawson, Frank Spear, you know, Mark Piper, and all of a sudden you realize you got a lot to learn. So I've just been implementing over a lot of years and trying some things and getting out there, trying to make sure our practice is always on the edge of the knowledge and understanding how we can apply things in ways that are meaningful to our patients. Have a great restorative practice. You know, my wife Vicky, she's my best supporter. My kids live in San Diego, so I get to spend time there. So I've got a great life and have built a great practice, and I'm really anxious to share some of my ideas and some of my failures with people too, so they can have a smoother road than I did, hopefully.
Yeah, and I love this. I love what you have framed up today. And it's very powerful because as a young restorative dentist or even a mature restorative dentist, one of the things you're always looking to do is how do we create a competitive advantage or differentiate yourselves from some of the other conversations that are happening in dentistry. And so, Jim, before we get into this, I always love to talk about the why before the how. Why is this more important now than ever as a dentist?
Yeah. So great question. You know, my personal why and the why of our business is to learn about a better way, look for that better way and share it with other people. So I've always felt like, conventional wisdom was sometimes not as wise as people think it is, you know, and mediocrity is really the enemy of greatness, and good is the enemy of greatness, of course, as well. So always looking to do something better, something different. I think it's more important to be different than better in the eyes of the consumer. So we're always looking, for that competitive advantage. And it's so different now than it was many years ago. We could come out and be the best technical, the best clinical dentist in a community and get known for that. And that would carry us a long way. That doesn't work anymore. You've got to be business-minded, you've got to be mindful of creating exceptional experiences for people and being able to differentiate yourself clinically as well. So our journey has always been to try to stay on the edge of the knowledge and then find ways to implement that. And so I think when we're talking about a competitive advantage, we have to change our mindset of how we've historically approached our practices, how we historically approached our treatment to patients, and how we historically approach how we get paid for these things as well.
Yeah, and mindset's such an important part of dentistry because you can work hard, but this really determines where you go and how you enjoy this profession. And thank God for mentors. You know, Jim, I looked to you so early in my career for some of your thoughts. And then we were talking before we went live. Today, mentoring is way different than it used to be. We used to have things called preceptorships, and you had a lot more intimate communication where dentists would, offer to come to my office. I'll teach you everything. And so now more than ever, dentists, young dentists and mature dentists alike have to find these places where they can introduce new mindsets and mindsets that move in the direction of their same core values. And so you had introduced a concept, a different way to look at fee-for-service, and I love this. So take us all through that. Sure. And how you guys have framed this up.
Yeah, so thanks for asking. So when we think about, how we approach care for our patients, if we want to differentiate ourselves, but if we want to live to our full potential, we have to start thinking, less about the commodities. Mm-hmm. Dentistry has, unfortunately, in my mind's eye, become more commodified. Everybody's competing for the implants, for the veneers, for the ortho, for the Invisalign. And that's all great. I mean, you have to have skills and clinical skills like that. But if we all compete for the commodities, then we are mired in what I call a service for fee basis. In other words, the fee is set. Right. the third party or a program or something else external is setting the fee. And you have to now shape your treatment to fit that fee model. And of course, if you're in any way wanting to expand your knowledge, be in relationship with patients, and see the importance of unique, individualized restorative care, relationship-based restorative care, that's a pretty tight box to be in, and it's going to get tighter and tighter and tighter. And right. So I had to start thinking about this in a different way. So the second way that we think about care is fee for service. But again, to me, that means maybe not having the constraints of having the fee defined, but it's thinking in ways of having a fee for a certain procedure or service. Mm-hmm. And my concept is different. It's more of a fee for outcome. Because the other two are based more around efficiency. Fee for outcome is based on effectiveness. It's our ability to effectively create a vision for our patient, which, by the way, in turn forces us to create a vision in our own mind of the outcome we want for each individual patient. Mm-hmm. And then having the systems in place that create the experience that can help that patient see that vision vividly.
Right.
Because, you know, go ahead. Sorry.
Right. No, because I have so many questions on this. This comes to mind, so many different stories, because really what we want as a patient is we're looking for a result or an outcome. And you lend itself to the commodity conversation when they're comparing apples to apples. And the other thing, I just got to add this, because you've seen this and you do this too. The materials now that we have in dentistry are amazing. Like even the bonding agents that we have are so good and so much better that now even amazing restorative dentists will tell you, I don't need to prep all that tooth structure. Now I can make the teeth look beautiful and I don't have to do the traditional spin a tooth down to get it where it needs to be so I need meet my financial goals. And dentists struggle with this because they're like, well, how would I charge? Well, the bottom line is a really good thinker will say, hey, look, I'm going to learn what the patient wants, create an outcome, and it's based on the outcome, not necessarily how many units I can produce at my fee. Right. Make sense?
Right. Oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, I've been around long enough to start. And I'm sure that other dentists will agree with me, and that they maybe put it in the chat box if they do, that at some point I had to start thinking differently, that I wasn't cheating the patient or doing less of a service because I wasn't spending all this time spinning those teeth down. You know, right. That I wasn't putting all this time and energy and effort into perfecting margins, into prepping teeth, that I need to be able to get paid for care, skill, and judgment. Mm-hmm. As well as all the hardware that goes and the bonding agents and all that that go along with this.
Right.
So it's more of that of again changing that mindset to think about, you know, I'm providing the outcome that this patient wants, doing the least amount of dentistry to get the most amount of good, but doing things in a way that is comprehensive, interdisciplinary, and very much focused on the vision they want for themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great way to think about it. Now, there's barriers to this too, natural inherent barriers. Can you talk about that?
Boy, are they. And I've got them all. You know, I've banged my head up against the wall so many times, just feels good when I stop, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the way I look at it most of the time.
You actually stop? I just keep going.
I know. It just depends on the day, you know?
Right.
So, but you know, doing it for so long, there's not too many days I go by going, you know, with the Flat Forehead Society going, you know, all these years and I'm still doing this, you're still doing something squirrely like this, or still hitting these barriers. And it's things that all of us kind of bash our heads into all the time. But, you know, we've got our history. We've got, you know, the history of, oh, it's worked this way before. And I think that's a real trap that I've fallen into. I was very successful not thinking this way. I was very successful in that commodity model for so many years. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's not as the same as it was, but our history keeps saying, well, it's worked all these ways for years. Why should we change? And so you get stuck in that history, you know, and we get programmed. I mean, our wiring is that we learn, we think in pictures, you know, it's a matter of, and I think this is a key point to make, is that anytime we're learning something, we're learning it because we're picturing it in our mind. But we also have this history of a lot of vivid pictures in our mind of things that we've done before that have worked. And we've got to be able to change our own story, essentially, because we're wired to think the same way. I often think about this in the context of a patient. And if you treat a lot of temporomandibular disorders or facial pain problems, you know that how you understand a little bit more about how people are wired and how that wiring creates memory. So anybody that's made a bite splint can relate to this story. So that you've gone to take your course and you've made the bite splint, and as a dentist, you think, well, I understand how the joint's supposed to work, how the jaw's supposed to be positioned. I'm hitting my bite splint perfectly well, and all my patients should get better. So I'm going to go into my practice and I'm going to start doing bite splint therapy. And I'm going to charge, you know, $800 or $1,000 for my bite splint. You know, and 2,700 adjustments later, you're wondering what went wrong. You know, why didn't I? This is supposed to work. I understand occlusion. You know, I went to Spear, I went to Pankey, I went to the Coise Institute. I understand. But what you realize is everybody's different. Mm-hmm. And some of those patients have a lot of muscle memory that is really difficult to overcome. And so, it's a metaphor to how we think as well. We have that same that same kind of memory in our own brain that's difficult to overcome. You know, that you have to understand that patient and be very adept at realizing that the individualization of that care is going to be key to your success. Otherwise, you're going to be doing a lot of stuff that you're not getting paid for, and you're going to just throw it out the window. You know, you say this right. doesn't, you know, and so. Right.
And you can speak to this too. Like, yeah. What happens is you get better as a restorative dentist. These people that come in with bite splints, they aren't like easy patients.
No.
You're not their first rodeo. And so some people bring these things in and they say, can you help me? Now, you know, sometimes you take on these cases. Sometimes you go, lady, you have problems no one can fix, you know, type of a thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the fee for outcome is a much better way to approach this because you don't often know. There are some things that you do know and maybe some things you don't know, and you've got to be able to communicate confidently to this patient before you just embrace traditional treatment methodologies, right?
Exactly. So you know, this is the barrier in our thinking, you know, because we have these same kind of engrams in our brain that cause us to think a certain way and act a certain way and manage our practice a certain way. You see that all the time. But it's also the barriers in practice. So when, yes, you may understand occlusion, you may take the workshop, but you have to be in relationship with that patient well enough to know where the pitfalls are. So for example, in the clinical side, we'll tell patients, you know, we're going to do this therapy. It is this long, it involves this much, these many adjustments. And from our experience, this is the fee for that protocol. Now, 90% of our patients get 90% better in that space. However, you may be the exception.
Right.
And depending on the patient, I'll say you will be the exception, but they might be the exception. And so there's space in there for me to say, okay, we've gone through the 8 adjustment phase. I gave you a couple more just to see, you know, and be generous because I'm not a beam counter. But you're obviously needing more therapy. That, as we talked about before. So here's the, you know, what we need to add on to that, and that keeps you. You know, most of your patients will fall within your guidelines once you've developed a pretty good, a flexible protocol for people depending on their circumstance. But you're presenting an outcome for them that you anticipate, but you're not locking yourself to it. And that's the hardest example. The most difficult example is that patient with complex joint problems and airway problems layered on top of that. So those are the most uncertain. So you have to give yourself an out too. Yeah,
absolutely. And this comes to mind, a mutual friend of ours, both of ours, you know, Jeff Rouse had mentioned this a couple months back. Now being an authority on airway, it's funny watching all these people travel to his practice and fly in. And he's like, I've just come to the conclusion, here's the fee for this phase. And then we'll determine where to go next. Cause you can't, there are some of these cases that are so complex. You can't necessarily promise the perfect outcome. So I love how you look at this. Now, one other thing that you mentioned, I love, you said putting dentistry in play on what you've learned, it's hard. No one really talks about this because people say, well, I've been trained here. I went there. And we both know like the number of people that take all that off of the shelf and put into play is low. And it's not because they don't know how to do it. They can you explain that phenomenon?
Sure.
Because you've watched dentists go through this for more than 30 years.
Yeah. So as an instructor, 20. Yeah. And watching who develops, who really has a positive impact on their practice, who can implement well and who doesn't. And it again goes back to those barriers. We've got history, we've got our wiring, and then we've got the third thing, which, you know, some wise man told me one time that discipline solves all problems. Who was that? Oh, it was you.
I don't know that it solves all problems. It does fix a lot of them, though.
I think you said all. I'm holding you to it.
But
it is persistence and repetition. You know, and so we can get caught up in our own culture that we've created. And we support that culture because of our history. It's been successful before. And we're not willing to step back, pull back the reins, and change that culture. So people who implement well are willing to look to the future and say, and define, this is what I want my practice to look like, and then work backwards from there to try to take the steps to implement. So that persistence and repetition, what is it that they say it takes 21 days to start to form a habit, but that's about 50% effective. It takes about 60, it depends on, I've seen different statistics, but 60 to 65 days of doing something, 65 days in order to really for it to become ingrained in your culture. Now, and dentists can relate to that. Think about how long it took you to have an unconscious competence about prepping teeth, where you just do it. You know, you're not even thinking about it anymore of how much you're taking off here and there. You're just doing it. And literally, you know, it took at least 65 days of in a row of just to get minimally competent. But that any habit is like that. So you have to be able to take what you've learned and now reinforce it. You can do that through study groups and, as you said, through mentors. But you've got to, you know, be able to have that on an ongoing basis. And mentorship is different than what it used to be. Yeah. But that's the support that people need. You know, you can take the you can take those courses and you can say, yeah, now I know something about occlusion, but until you get that and put it into play and practice and try it and do it over and over and over again, 10,000 hours or something to be a master, you won't be able to feel comfortable in implementing it in the practice, but you have to be willing to make that change and overcome those barriers.
Yeah, we talk about it all the time as a coaching company, like guided experience is often the most valuable, or guided learning, because we can often teach a dentist or an office, but until they get in these situations again and go, no, and you guys do this through diagnostics, you and Dr. Robbins, yeah. I'm gonna have you talk about that, but even over the shoulder courses are so good. I've learned from some great surgeons, they're like, you never know how somebody is going to place an implant until you watch them place one and you right. go, ah, no, 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 no. And then you learn from a master. And that's part of what our learning is missing nowadays. But it's critical. I mean, we need it as human beings. I don't know that I could have ever been a dad without, you know, having a dad. I know that everybody has a great experience, but it's part of our guided experience in all the things that we want to be as we grow. And in dentistry, you've got to make this progress, right? Like even your career, you're getting a wonderful phase of your career where the next chapter has got to be better than the last. And so it's critical to differentiate yourself with a mindset like this. What other barriers do you see with dentists when it comes to the fee for outcome mindset?
Well, it's how do you find the time? You know, that really is, and I think, again, it has to start with your with clarity of vision and being able to work back, you know, and then also getting some support. But it really is difficult when, you know, you're structured one way to make those changes that allow you to spend the time with your patients and to organize your thoughts in a certain way and organize your cases in a certain way so that you can have success in these areas. And so you really need, you know, this ongoing support, and ongoing input from people who have done this that can help you think through things. The other part I think that's inherent in dentists is that we tend to think, you know, linearly. And that's problematic when you're thinking about outcome based. You can't just be thinking in number of units or crowns. You've got to think about what's the outcome. So I was writing a letter today. This is how far this has come, with a very a wonderful lady from Kansas City that came to see us. The money's not a barrier for them. She came to me because she felt like I could help her solve some problems, right? So she came with concerns about, she lost a tooth to resorption, she has aesthetic concerns, and she has concerns about stability. Her bite doesn't feel stable. Now, I could look at that and say, yeah, I could put the implant back in number 14. You've got plenty of bone. And I could do a little orthodontics, expand, make some space for your anterior teeth, do some veneers, and she probably would have thought that was pretty good. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that this person, when you look at their history, she's got hypothyroidism, hyperparathyroidism, Hashimoto's disease. She has a diagnosis of ADD, and she takes Adderall, amphetamine, every day. She takes Lexapro because she has anxiety. She's had 4 bicuspid extractions and orthodontics twice, and she's got cracked molars and anterior wear and a scalloped tongue. So now all of a sudden, you know, this is a whole different profile.
It is.
So I'm backing up and I'm saying, well, you know, we could fix your teeth. And if we looked at it on a fee, a service for fee basis, what we'd be looking at is we've only got certain fees we can charge. So we're going to have to do the crown. We're going to have to do the veneers. We're going to have to put the implant in. That's going to have to call it good. Because I can't take care, skill, and judgment and expand that to fee for service, much less fee for outcome.
Right.
In the fee for service, I could charge what I wanted, but I'd just be doing something that really relates more to teeth and bone support and gingival health. But now I'm looking at it differently. So you take a CBCT, you see that she has degenerative changes in her condyles. We already knew she had degenerative changes in her disc from our Doppler auscultation. So we might have a question about disc placement. We might have a question about growth. We already have a smaller maxilla because a contracted dentition because of the orthodontics. And guess what? We've got an obstructive airway too. So she's got a Mallampati-4 airway. You look at the CBCT. Her airway's narrowed at the base of her tongue and the floor of her mouth. And now we've got a whole different issue. And she has a deviated septum, by the way. Now think about this. So it gets even better. What effect has that had on her ADD, her so-called attention deficit? If she's had fragmented sleep for the last 20 years or more, what effect has that had on her depression, her anxiety?
Tremendous.
Yeah.
Tremendous. I mean, it could. It could.
Oh, by the way, she has laryngopharyngeal reflux too. Oh, wow. So, you know, and she's been tested from all these things. She's seen an ENT at University of Kansas Medical Center, a very prominent ENT, and everybody's got a piece of this, but nobody's pulling it together. So now my job is to be the quarterback for this thing. Right. And I can't get to the dentistry until I solve the airway problem. And I can't, I can't stabilize the joints until I solve the airway problem. And then once I get that solved with the help of this interdisciplinary team I'm going to create for her from her physicians, now I can move on to the dentistry.
It's so powerful what you're saying, because diagnosis is just one of those things we don't talk about enough in dentistry, but it is one of the key factors to truly differentiate yourself. Obviously, you got to be a great communicator and a great leader, but diagnosis is really one of those things that people just skip over and quickly diagnose in a lot of respects. Do you see that or not?
Oh, absolutely. You know, you talked about Bill Robbins, who is a good friend of both of ours, and he and Jeff are, you know, just wrote the book on diagnosis, and you know, they gave language to much of our intuition. You know, a crown is not a diagnosis. You know, ortho is not a diagnosis. Those are treatment options.
Right.
And the treatment options are dependent on the diagnosis. That's why I'm spending time with this lady to find out what are the core diagnostic pieces, not only dentally, but medically for her, that influence the success of our care. Because unless we solve those issues, it's not. So, yes, there are formats for diagnosis, global diagnosis, facially generated treatment planning, you know, from Spear, Panky Man Schuyler philosophy. You know, there are formats for diagnostics, but at the same time, it's the ability to integrate, you know, diagnostics into your practice and into your plan, so that you have a way to lay this out in ways that make sense. Mm-hmm. And all that in that case that I just mentioned, you know, that's a complex case that I would have looked at in a far more simplistic manner earlier, been less successful with, and not given the patient my best with the knowledge we have today in this day and age, thanks to people, you know, all those great mentors I've mentioned, plus people like Jeff and Bill Robbins and Jim McKee and Mark Piper, people like that really are on the edge of knowledge here. And so integrating that is critical. So, you know, you have to have the ability to diagnose and then put those pieces in place. So you have joint stability, you have a patent airway, and then you can implement prosthodontics and orthodontics into that to influence it in the most positive way possible.
Yeah, I got to ask you this question too, because you get it and I get it too. I have young dentists come up to me and say, well, what's the future of private care? You know, and you've put a new language to this fee for outcome or fee for service. But I find that I even get this at play. People are like, well, I'm fee for service. I mean, my practice is all PPOs. And I'm like, that's not how I define it. So the definitions vary. Here's my question. Private care dentistry, where people pay for outcomes, what's the future hold? And you don't see it dying, like your practice isn't drying up, do you? Yeah. Because of all of the DSOs and PPOs and shared agreements?
No, I don't see it at all. As a matter of fact, again, you know, it's like Jeff said, you know, because he has made himself an expert on airway, he's not having a problem. You know, you have to have that expertise. Now, that has to be in tandem with a terrific, you know, a five-star customer experience. That right. absolutely has to be part of it.
Now explain why. I want you to explain why, because that's a really good point.
Because people don't think like dentists, you know. They don't care what your margins look like. They don't, they care about, can you take care of them? Are you listening to them? Are you helping them solve the issues and have a better future? And do they trust you? You know, and that has very little to do with your technical ability. Now, the technical ability, I think, is the foundation of what you can differentiate, how you can eventually differentiate yourself. But you're not going to get that opportunity without five star service, without a really good customer experience that goes out and tells, you know, other people. Because what's interesting is people don't come to you. This lady that I was talking about, she came to me with three things. I want more stability. I don't want to lose any more teeth. I want my teeth to look better. She had no idea about airway, joint problems, things like this. But once she came and she experienced us, then she was open to hearing about it. You know, that then she, and I have to have that on the shelf to be able to deliver it for her.
Right. Right.
So you can't have the five-star experience and then not be able to deliver the dentistry, obviously, but you're not going to be able to deliver the dentistry unless you have the five-star experience as well. Mm-hmm. You know, right. You've got to have great management and be able to create that experience. You have to have great marketing so that your marketing speaks to who you are. And that's a constant tussle, you know, and then you've got to be able to take it off the shelf and deliver it in ways that are meaningful to patients. And so it is a whole different way of thinking, but if you're willing to make that commitment and realize where your strengths and your barriers are, and reshape your future, I think that there's just a great opportunity. Now, it's not going to be, you know, for the majority of dentists, because right. it's going to be that niche of maybe what we consider, you know, the upper 25% or so that are masters or learning to become masters that really have a passion for this, because you've got to really be very intentional about it and do the hard work. And sometimes right. the hard work is just, you know, clarity is getting out of your own way. That's the hardest work.
Right.
Getting rid of all your own crap and, you know, and learning something new, you know, that's the hardest thing for me.
Yeah. And we have a lot of younger dentists. We've got dental students watching now and young clinicians. Jim, help me sort this out. And I'm a 32-year-old dentist and I'm watching this. And I'm like, Jim, easy for you to say, but like the whole fee for service thing, fee for outcome, where would you start? Like, give me some nuggets here on what you would start, where you would start. And I want you to talk too. You and Bill have developed the dental diagnosis. You're in the process of developing it. So put those two together for me, would you?
Okay. So, you know, everyone has different phases in their practice life. And so, you know, coming out of school, you know, I learned enough just not to be dangerous. And I'm not sure I wasn't dangerous.
Right.
You know, I was a pretty good student, you know, but I'm not sure I wasn't dangerous looking back at it. Mm-hmm. So you got to get that reality first, is that you got the basics, and some places, you know, were more advanced in certain areas than others in dental school. So coming out and starting your practice, you do have to get some, you know, just some fundamental skills in prosthodontics, you know, in occlusion, in orthodontics or Invisalign and implants, things like that. You have to get those fundamental things. But at the same time, you can start to create a vision for your practice that's similar to somebody you admire. You know, pick somebody out that you admire, that you see, I'd like to do it that way. Mm-hmm. And that's the first step, is to start shaping your practice in ways that you, where it eventually becomes that. It's not to say, this is not stuff that you can do. You can't do it by email, and you can't even do it by workshops. You've got to be able to implement it on an ongoing basis. So you just have to start with your knowledge base, but continue your knowledge, gaining knowledge in places, in the institutions that we talked about, where you can start to get some better understanding of these fundamental core principles that you can take, beyond where you are today. But also develop your practice in a way that creates that experience for people. That's easy. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, but it's doable. You don't have to have special skills. You just have to have training from people like you and your team to help you develop these systems, systems run the practice, people run the systems, right?
Right.
So you develop systems and a culture that can help you excel. And if you put those basic pieces in place early, it's much easier. I started off thinking I wanted to be the biggest practice with thousands of patients, mm-hmm. and 8 chairs and all this stuff. And I built that, and I went and I looked around one day and I went, what the hell is this? This is crazy. I'm not doing anybody any good. And I'm certainly driving myself nuts. And that wasn't for me. I mean, some people could do it. I can't. My brain's going too fast as it is. I don't need more things polluting it. So, but you have to slow down and really get a vision of what, if this type of practice appeals to you, I think there's a great future, but you have to be intentional and start with those steps.
Amen.
And those are steps you can start with. And then eventually, as you gain more confidence, you can start to, divorce yourself from all those more of those outside influences. Now, if you can get into a situation where it's already set up for you, where in a practice it's already doing it, that's ideal. But you got to work hard. I mean, it's not easy. It's not like you can just go down and take the course and just come back and be an expert.
I thought it was easy. I thought you just kind of open up, people come through, you build your office and they come in, and it's not that easy.
No. I mean, I can send you the box of TMJ tools, but it's not going to be a damn bit of good. Yeah.
Now, I want you to talk about the diagnostics tool, because we have our dear friend, Dr. Bill Robbins, who is a clinical genius. I mean, 40 years in practice. What are you guys doing? And this will be it's in development. It will be out this year. Tell us a little bit about it and why it's so important.
So thanks for asking. When we talked about mentorship, you said it beautifully at the beginning. It's different than it was before. We have so many things in our lives that consume our time. A lot of them, with devices and things like that are clamoring for our attention. Plus all the responsibilities of our practice and our family that are really important to us. So it is difficult to have an ongoing relationship on almost a day-to-day or week-to-week basis with people that can help you develop this thought process and these systems and these protocols that can help you integrate things together. Mm-hmm. So how do you bring in airway? How do you bring in TM joint stability? How do you bring in fundamentals of occlusion into the clinical piece of this that can help you become a better restorative dentist? And how can you do it incrementally to where you become a good diagnostician first and then implement? And that's the key, is that you don't have to be an expert in everything, but except diagnosis. Mm-hmm. That, this is a principle that Pete Dawson told us a long time ago. You have to be the physician of the masticatory system, which today is a lot different definition than it ever has been. It's really different.
Absolutely.
But it's fun. So what Bill and I have talked about is developing a platform, and we're working on it to where we're going to have, a closed Facebook group and a platform that helps dentists with, on an ongoing basis, think through these different protocols and case types and organize their thought process to be able to deliver the best care they can deliver. And we'll try to customize that to the level of expertise, but also help them, you know, help direct them with their learning to get the next piece that we think might be helpful to them to be able to advance to the next level.
Awesome, buddy. And so if people are interested, that they can reach out to you. Now, for the benefit of people listening on iTunes, Jim, how do I get a hold of you if I want more information about how this works?
So you can email me at Dr. Jim, D-R-J-I-M, at jamesottenDDS.com. Here's my graphic for the video. Custom graphic I made just for this.
Good work.
Pretty impressive, huh?
It is very impressive. So, it's all you need sometimes, right?
Yeah, it's all I need. I'm a pen and paper guy. It works well for me. Drives my staff.
Works really well for me. Works really well.
I learn better that way. And you do learn better that way. Write things out. You know, you sit down with a piece of paper. I would encourage everybody that's listening today or whenever you hear this, sit down and spend an hour and think of and write down your ideal practice and your ideal life and as much detail as you can get. Because if you can't visualize that, it's going to be hard to work towards that. Right. Just take that time to do it and do it with a pen and a piece of paper. It doesn't work as well when you're typing or dictating or things like that. There's something about, you know, the neural connections in your brain that are much more active, and your creativity is much more active if you're writing something. So if you'll write to me at Dr. Jim at jamesottenDDS.com, OTTEN is the last name, jamesottenDDS.com, then I will invite you to our Facebook group, our closed group on Facebook, and help you engage in the development of this. You can help us kind of beta test some ideas as we go forward, because we're thinking of, you know, middle of this year we want to really launch. And so we've come up with some concepts and some structure, and we're just putting all the pieces together right now.
Awesome, buddy. Well, I am so grateful to call you my friend and to have you on here as a great guest, Jim. I am just ecstatic. So thanks, buddy. Appreciate you being on. So
hey.
Any last words of wisdom for our viewers?
You know, I can't tell you, you know, what you have meant to me over the years. I mean, you're just, I'll tell the story. He walks into my office. He had just started the company. I think he had like two clients at the time. So I'm one of the older clients.
I think
clients.
I have one. I don't know. I think one,
yeah. and he came, Kirk comes over and he impressed my front office person so much that Lisa came back to me and she said, you know, I know you hate it when these people come in and try to interrupt your day, but you ought to talk to this guy. And that's how he met. He just came over and said, I was supposed to meet you. And I said, okay, who told you who told you that? They must have been misguided, but they weren't. So that's how we met. And I'll tell everybody that you can't do this anymore, but Kirk used to come over and just speak to my team meetings. So, I can't afford you anymore, man.
we were in place. To help each other, and it was
wonderful. And I treasure our relationship, and I so admire what you and the company have done for so many thousands of dentists. And good work, man. I'm so proud of you. I just think that you've done so much good stuff in the profession, and I know that I speak for a lot of people when I say I can't thank you enough. And thanks for the honor of being on here. I just love this stuff.
Hey, well, it's my pleasure. Thank you, Jim, for everything. I really appreciate it. So stick around, buddy, while we say goodbye to everybody else and thank our guests. So thank you guys for watching the Best Practices Show. Do us a favor if you enjoyed today, which I know you did, just hit the share button, share with your friends. Keep sending us suggestions for things that you want to see on the show, whether it be from Jim or other guests, and we'll do our best to line it up for an amazing year ahead of us in 2019. Hope you guys all have a wonderful year ahead, and we'll see you next time on the Best Practices Show. You guys have a good rest of your day. We'll